Hey, it is Friday, February 7th, 2020. My name is Daniel Bader, and this is the Android Central Podcast. Joining me this week, Jerry Hildenbrand, fresh off of a complete overhaul of our root homepage. If you haven't been there for a while, go check it out. It is beautiful. We can talk a bit about that at the end. It was an interesting evening I had listening to very, very opinionated people on Twitter telling me how wrong we were. But there's always a good reason for people getting mad on. No, that's not true. There's sometimes a good reason for people getting mad on the internet. Speaking of somebody who I've never seen get mad on the internet, Joe Mehring, welcome back to the show.
Hello, hello. Thank you for...
Have you ever gotten mad on the internet?
I'm sure about something minuscule at one point or the other, but I try to keep it as cheery as possible.
You do. You have a very good, very even demeanor, which is why you're just so pleasant.
Oh, thank you.
You're such a nice guy.
I'll try to keep the pleasantries coming along.
Well, we wanted you on the show today because you went down to Chicago yesterday for the Motorola event. And this has been a very busy week for Motorola. Yesterday was the official launch of the Razr, even though if you've been following Android Central, you would have seen that we published our initial review about 5 days before that. But that's what we're going to talk about for the first part of the show. And then we're going to dig into the end of BlackBerry. Cue the sad trombone.
What is a BlackBerry?
The youngster speaks up. Now. And we're going to end on some cautionary notes about MWC because apparently nobody wants to be there because of coronavirus. And to be honest, as somebody who's gearing up to leave in less than 2 weeks, I'm starting to feel that way as well. So we'll come back to that. But first, Motorola. So we've been following the travails of this company for many years now. It's been, this has been a company that has basically gone through it all. It was the head honcho of the Android ecosystem for a while with HTC, if you remember that company. Motorola was the first brand basically to be associated with the Droid name on Verizon. It had a basically unbreakable partnership with Verizon and still does to this day. And to some extent, that is kind of what's keeping the company's business afloat in the US. So we now have the Motorola Razr. It's the company's first foldable phone. It's been developed in conjunction with the X1 Fold from parent company Lenovo. It was supposed to have a really strong hinge and a practically unbreakable screen. And it's got this really cool form factor that everybody knows and loves. And Nirav Gandhi, our executive editor, reached out. He published his initial review this week after getting a retail unit 5 days before the actual phone was supposed to go on sale. Joe, when you were in Chicago there yesterday, did anybody talk about what happened with this bungled retail launch?
They didn't mention anything at all. It was just excitement that the Razr had officially gone on sale that day on the 6th. But other than that, it was basically just the Razr's out there. It's a thing. It's exciting. But nothing about why this launch has been so rocky as it has been.
So, Jerry, the Input Mag, Topolsky's new tech vertical as part of the... What's his other brand? I don't Inverse. Outline. The Outline. That's what it was. Anyway, Input Mag is brand new, and there was an article that got written last week earlier this week that basically said the launch of the Motorola Razr has been an unmitigated disaster, and it summed up all of the editorials, including ours, that people had written. And basically, the conclusion is that not only is the phone a disappointment, but the way that Motorola has handled its launch has been underwhelming. What has your take been of how a company trying to make a commercial success out of a very nascent technology and a very unproven technology, how do you think the company has done so far?
Well, it's Motorola, so... We've set the bar a little lower for Motorola. Come on, everybody knows we have. They were at the top and they've slipped down, and we expect a little less from them, and we accept a little less from them. But still, this is bad. The phone itself, generation one or maybe even pre-1 product, I didn't expect much from it. I knew we would instantly find everything wrong with it, and then eventually we'll find a few things we like about it. But first impressions are always going to be everything you don't like because it's different. I don't suggest anybody run out and buy one. And that's not necessarily Motorola's fault. It's expensive. It's new tech that doesn't quite work as well as anybody wants it to. And I expected it. I expected it with the Fold. And look how that turned out. And I don't want to be too hard on them for it, except for the launch debacle. That's insane. I mean, if Nirav can get one 5 days before the retail launch, how does that happen?
And we can talk a little inside baseball here. The company still has not distributed review units for its new phone. So, you know, we were expecting review units in January during around CES. That was then pushed back because the phone was delayed a little bit. And thinking that when they, you know, when they scheduled this event in Chicago for the new Moto Gs, which we'll talk about in a second, you know, Joe thought he would walk away with a review unit. That clearly has not happened. And we still, a day after launch, have no idea if and when that is coming. So the publications, you know, we're very privileged to be able to have a budget to pay for expensive phones like the Moto Razr. But some publications that rely on review units to put out their reviews just don't have access to it. And I mean, it sounds a little bit like we're complaining here, but the reality is that companies benefit from putting out review units, right? They distribute review units and they hope that the majority of people like their product. Not everybody will. But that is the way that this industry works. It's like not screening a movie to film critics because you know that they're all going to pan it. And I wonder if the case here was that Motorola knew, based on its early tests, that people would generally find the phone to be buggy and underwhelming, and therefore decided or has decided to delay review units until it can release a bunch of bug fixes.
See, I wasn't going to say that because I hate to say conspiracy theory style stuff, but I agree with you, man.
I don't think this is a conspiracy theory because this is a company that has been doing this exact game for a decade now, right? It has been, it's one of the oldest companies in the game. It has been distributing phones to reviewers for a long time. And I got to ask, Jerry, because, you know, you've seen these technology trends evolve over the course of your career. And foldable phones really does bring us back to this introduction of mechanical failure as a possible problem vector, right? Like, we have really removed as many mechanical aspects from our phones over the last few years as possible. I mean, we've basically pared down the number of jacks, of input methods. We have or input trajectories. We have made sure that they're all made of glass and metal, that they don't come apart. You can't replace their battery very easily. So it's really hard to break a phone, right? You can smash the screen of a phone. You can put it through a vise and just kill it. But like, it's really hard to break a phone the way that now with these hinges, you can break a foldable device.
I want to think that you almost have to want to break it. I don't think the hinge is going to give out, especially from a company like Motorola, who they only exist today because they were successful at making flip phones. You know, there was a time that Motorola almost disappeared and there was no Lenovo to snatch them up. So flip phones saved that company, and they ought to be pretty good at making phones that flip open vertically. The screen, however, is another story.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday we saw CNET put it through its paces. It got to 27,000 folds and then folded. And, you know, even though it still worked, it was kind of, you know, it was raggedy, right? You could just flop it open. It was basically broken. Unlike the Galaxy Folds, which went to, I think, 107,000 folds. Joe, you know, when you think about buying a, you know, expensive new phone, are foldable phones on that list for you?
I mean, maybe to some small degree, just because there's the cool factor, because it's such a new form factor and it's a new type of device compared to metal glass straight slabs that we have. But I mean, if I'm looking at the Razr, for example, of a phone I'm going to use on a daily basis, for me, at least right now, there's too much uncertainty of how a hinge is going to hold up over weeks or months or a year or two of use. And I'm worried if you're spending $1,500 or almost $2,000 for Galaxy Fold, if it's such a cool concept now and it's so appealing just because it's such a fresh device, but if that's going to wear off in a year or 2 years, and if you end up wishing I'd rather just spent considerably less money for something that functionally is probably going to make a lot more sense after this gimmick, if you want to call it, probably wears off in a few months down the road.
I mean, there's also this aspect of Motorola has to build in various replacement mechanisms, and so does Samsung. They've already done this with the Fold, where you get an extended warranty, you can replace your screen once at a lower cost, and these are just going to be de facto additions to foldable phones for a while, I think. And I think, you know, this is a company that when I saw them in November during the launch event, they were very confident that while, yes, you could buy into this extended warranty or this insurance plan, you really wouldn't need to, that this is a phone you could just use like any other. So I am really hopeful that what we're seeing from reviewers is not endemic and something that won't, you know, won't kill it the way that it killed the first Fold. Certainly that is not the indication, right? That you know, these are a lot more robust than the original Folds. You can certainly loosen the hinge, but it doesn't seem like it's going to stop working anytime soon. On the complete opposite side, Joe, yesterday you went down to, what's the building called? The Mart?
It's a Market Street or Market Plaza. It's some giant corporate, very fancy building.
Yeah, it's called the Merchandise Mart.
That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's this massive building in downtown Chicago. I've been there a couple of times. It's beautiful. It's really, really nice. And Motorola has a few floors of this building. And I'm guessing that's where they took you, right, to show you these new devices. So walk us through your day, because Motorola always puts on a really good show.
So we started out after copious amounts of coffee, because it is January or February in Chicago and blissful tropical time of year there. But we got that started. Then we went through a little presentation, got to see the new Moto G phones and what they're all about, and, you know, the G Stylus and the G Power and why they decided to bring these to the U.S. And then we just had like little breakout sessions where we got a one group goes hands-on with the G Stylus and one group goes hands-on with the G Power to get hands-on and familiar with them. And yeah, they're very interesting phones. I was going through the day and playing with them. There's, at least like from my perspective, kind of like a mix of very new stuff they're doing, and also these are still the Moto G phones that we've known for a few years now. Because the Stylus is the first Moto G or first Motorola phone in general that the company's done with a built-in stylus for any device. So from that perspective alone, it feels like a very fresh start. And you also have the new branding where the G8 is not in the US. It's just G Stylus and G Power. But it's also pretty similar. It's mid-range processor, a full HD plus display. It's good phone specs that are going to get you a quality phone that you can recommend to aunts and uncles and cousins, but it's still going to cost you under $300. And it's the same mentality, just sprinkling in new little ideas to kind of make it stand out, I think, a bit more than it has in years past.
Okay. So walk me through this reasoning, because back in, so, you know, go back a year and Motorola announces the Moto G7, the G7 Play, and the G7 Power for most markets. And then in some markets, there's the G7 Plus in places like South America and I believe parts of Europe. But here in North America, we didn't get the Plus, which was significantly more powerful. It was a lot more expensive, but it was very much like Motorola's budget or premium budget Play. So Moto G7 sells like hotcakes. The G7 Power is basically a slightly less well-equipped, but G7, but with a massive 5,000 milliamp hour battery. And then the Moto G7 Play is the cheapest of all. It's $199. It's still got the same processor, but it cuts down on RAM, on the camera. It doesn't have all the, you know, the sensors, and just it feels a little bit cheaper. So that's their lineup. And in October of last year, the company surprises everybody by saying, hey, we now have two Moto G8 phones, the Moto G8 Plus and the Moto G8 Play, but neither are going to be available here in North America. In fact, they're going to be available in very select markets, and they're not really going to exist in our marketing except in those very specific markets, right? We didn't hear a lot about the Moto G8 in North America because Motorola has really discovered that it needs to focus entirely on the market that they're in by making bespoke advertising campaigns and all that stuff. So now it's February, and we're expecting Motorola to come out with new Moto G phones, but they don't launch Moto G8s here. They launch these two new models, Moto G8 Stylus and Moto G Power. The Stylus is the flagship, right? It's the one that has the better camera. It has slightly better specs, I believe. But, you know, they're really positioning this as the one that if you have $300 to spend, you're going to buy it. Why do you think that is the differentiator, that they put a damn Stylus, an S Pen clone, inside this phone?
I mean, it helped them stand out a little, I guess. I mean, we've had Nokia with this onslaught of phones in the $200 to $300 price range that is kind of crowding the market, and it makes that argument for a Moto G phone, I guess, more difficult than it has in years past. Because like in 2013, 2014, it was one of the few phones you could get for that price that wasn't a steaming pile of garbage. But it feels like in the past couple of years, especially, that market has heated up a lot more than it used to be. So they've got to find a way to make themselves more appealing and stand out from just endless waves of other devices people have the option of buying. A Stylus is an interesting choice. I don't know if it's going to be, I mean, it's obviously not something everybody's going to flock to and buy the G Stylus for that reason alone. But I mean, you could compare it to another $300 phone that doesn't have a Stylus, and it's a little bit of extra functionality you're getting, and it's sort of a gimmick depending on how you want to look at it. And I'm sure for some people, they can say, hey, I can write my grocery list on here, I can take notes for contacts, and it's a small little thing that could be, you know, enough of a nudge to push them in that direction. But it's interesting too with the Stylus, at least the phones themselves, between the Stylus and the Power, are very, very similar across the board. They've got the same Snapdragon 665, same 4 gigs of RAM, both have expandable storage, headphone jacks, almost identical, but minus the Stylus, obviously, and the G Stylus and not the Power, is the camera system. Because on the G Stylus, you have just kind of a pretty typical 16 megapixel primary camera. But they also threw in the action camera, or I'm sorry, 48 megapixel primary camera for the Stylus. But they also have the 16 megapixel action camera, which is the, I believe, the same sensor, or a similar sensor to what they had in the Motorola One Action, which lets you record a landscape video when you're holding the phone vertically. So it effectively makes it impossible to shoot nasty vertical video with black bars on either side. And that kind of struck me as odd, because that seems like such a niche feature, at least from my perspective, that they're branching it out into this flagship phone as opposed to kind of the one-off, one-action. And that one's limited to video, and then with the G Power, you get more of a traditional ultra-wide camera for photos and videos. So it's kind of a weird mishmash between the stylus and the action camera of these features that probably not everyone's going to get a lot of value out of, but they're certainly unique compared to other phones you're going to find at this $300 price.
Okay, walk me through the experience of using this stylus, because, you know, Samsung has the S Pen functionality down to literally a science now. Like, you take the S Pen out, it's very clicky, it's super comfortable. You get that S note on the lock screen where you can just, you know, jot down a couple of notes. You have the Air Command, which gives you this hovering list of all of these various apps. What can you actually do on the Moto G stylus with that S, with that stylus? I'm going to call it an S Pen because I can't help myself.
Moto Pen. Yeah, I mean, it's right. Basically, it's, you don't get the Bluetooth wireless functionality that you get with the Galaxy Note 10, where you can use it for the hovering and the remote camera shutter stuff. But they have a Moto Note feature, which is basically what you get on an S or a Galaxy Note, where you take the stylus out when the screen is off and you can start taking notes instantly on the screen, and you put the stylus back in and it saves it as a note for you. And if you pull the stylus out when the screen is on, you get a pop-up menu of different apps that work well with the stylus, and you can customize that to Snapchat or a Evernote or whatever apps you prefer to use a stylus with that comes out when you take it out. Using it, it's, other than that, it's just basically a capacitive stylus and a touchscreen, so it doesn't go the extra level you'd get with an S Pen or with a Galaxy Note. But, I mean, the core function of it works the same if you're just focusing on taking quick notes and doing doodles or whatever else you want to do with it.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's basically what the Note 2 or 3 would give you rather than the Note 8 or 9 or 10.
Yeah, or a LG Stylo 5, but I'm sure they're trying to make this more popular than that just because that tends to get forgotten with everything else out there.
Well, I mean, that's interesting, right? Because the LG Stylo is a very popular phone. We don't ever talk about it. But the difference is that the phone doesn't have anywhere for the stylus inside of it, right? You store it separately and therefore you're going to forget it. So Motorola intelligently made room for the stylus inside the phone. And I think therefore it's going to get a lot more use. But I just wonder, Jerry, there's this, you know, Joe mentioned that Motorola has been coming up against Nokia, which is very interesting in the way that it differentiates its models. It just launched a new $129 Nokia 2.3. You know, this is a company that iterates on its designs every 6 to 8 months. It has phones at basically every price range. And what I'm interested in is Motorola had a lot of options with what it could use to differentiate itself, and yet it chose a stylus. But, you know, $300 seems to be the sweet spot for this company, right? We've seen it on our site. There are so many people searching for Motorola G7 information, trying to learn about it. You know, why this solution as opposed to something else? Why not invest that extra money in a better camera system or something, you know, wireless charging? Try to move the budget industry forward in that way rather than throw in a stylus that not everybody is going to use.
I share your confusion, and you hit it. The wireless charging, that's what they should have put there. That would have given the premium Moto G something that other phones in its price range don't necessarily have. A stylus, I mean, I can see why a lot of people find a stylus very useful, because it's smaller than your finger and you can do a lot more intricate things with it, you know, whether you're playing Sudoku or drawing a picture or taking notes. It's better than using your finger. But then again, you can type to take notes, and if you want to draw, it's, you know, just a regular stylus. It doesn't have 4,000 different pressure points. So I'm as confused as you are. I don't. I mean, it's a glorified coffee stirrer.
It does look like a coffee stirrer. Yeah,
I don't understand. I know that Motorola cares more about Brazil, for a great example, than it does the American market right now. And that makes sense for them. If you go to Brazil, and I think Andrew has even written something about this. If you go to Brazil, everybody has a Moto phone in their hands, just like everyone has an LG or a Samsung phone in South Korea. That is their primary market. That's where they should, you know, focus on the basics and getting the basics down pat is for Brazil. And if you want to experiment a little bit in America, that's understandable. But a stylus, instead of just making it better, I don't know, man. I'm trying to think of something, and I'm coming up blank.
Yeah, and I mean, what's interesting is that these two phones were announced specifically for the North American market.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it wasn't like the Moto G stylus will be coming to Brazil. I mean, maybe it will, but this is that market already has the G8 Plus and the G8 Play. And we can't forget that Motorola has been trying to add to its Motorola One line quietly for the last few months. There are now four, I think, in that lineup. After the original Motorola One in late 2018, throughout 2019, they released the Motorola One Action, the Motorola One Zoom, the Motorola One Macro in some markets, and most recently, in December, they launched the Motorola One Hyper. And all of these devices are extremely similar. They just have one or two differentiating features. So this is the Lenovo template, right, to a core. They have one foundational design, and they iterate very slightly on it to save money.
Absolutely. And I know Joe went through the presentation and heard everything that Motorola, you know, as a company said. But to me, the G Power is the premium model. It's got that big, huge battery.
Like I was saying earlier, too, I mean, I'd argue that the ultra-wide camera on that is probably useful for more people, too, because you can do your 118-degree field of view photos and videos, as opposed to someone buys the G Stylus and then doesn't realize till after the fact that, hey, I can't take pictures ultra-wide with this thing, even though there's a 117-degree ultra-wide camera on it.
I mean, there's also the fact that you can look at the Moto G Power as the regular phone now. Like, there's no Plus in the US, so the Stylus is essentially the Plus, and then the Moto G Power is just the regular Moto G, because people just want a really big battery and they want decent cameras, and that's it. The Snapdragon 665 in here, Jerry, it's an 11 nanometer chip. It's the successor to the 660, which was pretty popular, and it was, you know, plenty powerful. I think this is a good compromise. It doesn't feel like it's woefully underpowered compared to previous Moto Gs. The Snapdragon 636, I believe, that was in other devices. They were really, really underpowered.
Yeah.
So this is a nice step up. All, you know, both of the models have 4 gigs of RAM, at least 64 gigs of storage. Nice screens with these left-oriented hole punch cutouts. And, you know, overall, I think these are fine options. The only thing they don't have, NFC. And ooh, that still boggles my mind why a company would release a phone in North America. And these, even more so because they seem to be built for North America, they wouldn't have NFC.
And they had to have known that, you know, Google was working on some sort of nearby feature that could be initiated through NFC bumping. So, yeah, doubly so why it was omitted. It's a dollar, unless they just don't have room inside for it.
Yeah, but they put a 5,000 milliamp hour battery in there. So I don't think room is a problem.
I don't know. Personally, I'll take the 5,000 milliamp hour battery over styluses and NFC and, you know, far field cameras, whatever. Give me that battery, but that's because I've been using a Pixel 4 for a month and a half.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So, Joe, what was the feeling at the event around these phones, right? Are these phones are going to be released at, in carrier stores in the spring? Is this a major launch for Motorola, or is it something that they're trying to kind of, you know, they had a small event for it and they're going to put it on sale on Amazon and sell millions of them, but that's kind of it. Did they say anything about their dedication to improving software updates or anything like that?
Nothing on that front. I mean, they were very proud of the fact that it ships on Android 10, but you still have that looming gray cloud of a year or two after you have a Moto G phone of, am I going to get updated to Android 11? Am I going to get updated to Android 12?
No,
nothing there.
You're not.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, the Motorola reps were very excited and here's these new phones and we're very happy to launch them. But it, like this introduction of the stylus is, I guess, kind of builds onto that excitement. But if you look at it, just the core phone, there's still no NFC, no wireless charging. The software updates are still up in the air. So from all those aspects, a lot of the pain points of the G series are still there, despite the slightly different branding and the stylus some people may or may not use.
Now, I want to say, though, we are three jaded and very privileged users when it comes to smartphones. Your average person may disagree with us completely. I don't want to think anyone to think that we're speaking for everyone. If you have been waiting for a Moto G with a stylus and now you can get one and you think, man, that Jerry guy, he's a jerk. Him and Daniel, they just hate everything. Well, yeah, that's because we're spoiled. Moto makes good, solid phones. They leave a lot to be desired on the software front when it comes to patches and updates. But you probably won't go wrong if you think you want one of these.
Yeah, look, I'm the first person to recommend Moto G phones to people if they're looking for an inexpensive Android phone. I mean, our best cheap Android phones, Roundup, has the Moto G7 as our top pick.
Yep.
For a reason. And that's even with the understanding that it doesn't get a lot of updates. So my thing is, as long as you're getting Android 10, and this was last year too, as long as you're getting Android 9, plus regular quarterly security patches,
yep,
I'm fine recommending a phone. Even more so with Android 10, right? The year-over-year platform improvements are so much less now than they were 3 or 4 years ago that maybe Google comes out with something radical with Android 11 and 12, but I'm pretty confident that by, you know, the time Google releases its first Android 11 beta and then goes public with the major beta at I/O and then public release in August, we're not going to be clamoring over ourselves to get that right, the way that we used to, right? With Lollipop and Marshmallow. So this phone comes with Android 10. I think most people are going to be very happy with the way Motorola has implemented it. These are great phones, no doubt. It's just a little odd. And every year I come back and I'm like, Motorola did this odd thing again, but they still sell. You know, they've sold 100 million Moto Gs all over the world now. That's a ton of phones. So
there was a time, and I worked for Android Central at the time, that the Moto G was the phone I carried every day. So I do think very highly of the Moto G series. But like Daniel, they surprise me every year in a weird way.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's just like there's something strange about this. It's like that this like weird genius who just like does everything right, except, you know, he like puts dirt on his toast or something. I don't know. It's just like very strange. It's like, you know, he's a normal guy, except he eats dirt toast. I don't know. Anyway, we'll talk about Moto G and Motorola some more next week, I'm sure. Let's move on and talk about BlackBerry, because if you want to talk about dirt toast, you're going to talk about BlackBerry. Jerry, you wrote a beautiful and poignant essay about your love of BlackBerry after the company, or at least the keeper of the company's brand from a smartphone perspective, announced that they would not be renewing their license for the BlackBerry mobile brand.
Yeah.
So this is what they said on Tuesday. Monday morning. With TCL Communication When TCL Communications announced in 2016 that we'd entered into a brand licensing and technology support agreement with BlackBerry Limited to continue making new modern BlackBerry smartphones available globally, we were very excited and humbled to take on this challenge. And then they go on to say that the Key series, you know, starting with the Key 1 and Key 2 and then Key 2 LE, they were super successful in partner and you know, really well-received devices. But we do regret to share that as of August 31st, 2020, TCL will no longer be selling BlackBerry-branded mobile devices. TCL has no further rights to design, manufacture, or sell any new BlackBerry mobile devices, but they will support the phones up to 2 years from now. All right, so walk us through what happened here with TCL. Why does this company get into bed with BlackBerry, license its smartphones, and then give up 2 years later? What happened?
The reason why somebody wanted to get the license to produce a phone with the BlackBerry name on it was because there are certain pieces of the software that we saw with BlackBerry 10 that users really loved. Android users, you know, loved a lot of the BlackBerry apps when they became available. So, you know, why not try to keep making a BlackBerry, you know, a branded BlackBerry device that has all this stuff built in? And then, you know, you try to continue the legacy of BlackBerry security and throw a little bit of extra hardening into the phone. It didn't work. Nobody wanted to buy them. And now, you know, they say the partnership is over. I think the partnership has to be over because there's just no money left to keep making phones, whether they have a keyboard or not, because not all of the new BlackBerry phones had physical keyboards, and nobody bought those either. It's impossible to compete when you price your phones more than they're worth. Is that a good way to put that? More than they're worth?
Yeah, I guess so. A lot of people would disagree with you. I mean,
and I disagree. I thought that, you know, I had no problems with $600 for a Key 2. Not a problem. I think it's a great phone, worth every penny of it. I only stopped using it because I know it's never going to get updated with some of the new, more intricate permissions models that are in Android 10 that mean more to me than a phone with a keyboard. So,
here's my theory. My theory is, so TCL probably wanted to keep the Key 2 updated, right? And it was something that Key 2 owners have been looking for. My mom is a Key 2 owner. She loves the phone. Got stuck on Android Oreo, right? It never got Pi. It never got Android 10. It got stuck. And it's still, you know, it's way more performant than the original Key 1 was.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, but it still got stuck. And my guess is that BlackBerry, the company, the Canadian company, stopped investing the money it needed into Android platform updates. It wasn't worth going through the process anymore. And they have been pivoting to the enterprise, to, you know, EDM or EMM hardware software solutions, and making sure that, you know, they are really focusing on automotive, on QNX, where they actually can make a lot of money, and supporting what amounts to a consumer piece of hardware, even though the Key series was aimed at business people, it was still a consumer piece of electronics.
Right.
It just wasn't worth it. So this is TCL trying to negotiate with BlackBerry. Okay, we have an obligation. We promised updates. When are you going to get this platform update? BlackBerry says, okay, fine. We're working on it. Doesn't actually happen. And then they just say, fine. Well, you're not going to support the phones the way that we want. We're not selling them because it's not receiving the support that we want. So we're just going to pull our license and not renew it. Now, that's conjecture, but
well,
I feel
not,
like
not all of it.
If I feel like that is exactly what happened.
And well, it's not all conjecture, and I think we know a little more inside baseball that there are people at TCL who are really adamant that we are doing everything we can to get this phone updated And I trust those people because we've been working with them for a while. I know those people. The rest makes perfect sense. I can see why BlackBerry wouldn't want to invest any more money in it. They couldn't even make money from BBM, which at one time was the most popular piece of mobile software in the world. You know, that was 100 years ago, but still, if you can't make money on a 99 cents per month subscription for a software that was actually really, really good, why bother?
I remember New Year's Eve 2009. I had a BlackBerry Bold. Was it a BlackBerry Bold? And I was it the 9000? When did the 9900 come out? And I was obsessed. I loved this thing so much. It was the Bold 9000, and I could not use BBM because it was so popular here in Canada. It was completely overloaded, and I couldn't get a message through. And it's so interesting how quickly that changed, right? It completely evaporated.
And that's, you know, because WhatsApp was smart enough to make sure we're right there on the iPhone, right there on every Android phone. Look, we've got almost the same feature set, and you can use it on your new cool smartphone.
So wild.
It is a shame.
Do you have any idea what we're talking about here?
I'm vaguely remembering this from history books, but I'm trying to... I don't know. Like, with the whole BlackBerry thing, though, I mean, from a millennial's perspective, Gen Z's perspective, whatever you want to call it, was the only driving factor the keyboard? Because, I mean, I know they've always stood for, you know, BlackBerry is a very secure platform and business people are drawn to that. But with modern Android and Android 10, with the changes and updates Google's made, is there a argument to be made for a BlackBerry or any other phone that stresses security when it's essentially the same software that everyone else has access to?
No, not at all. No, I mean, there used to be an argument that a BlackBerry was more secure, but that was never really the issue. There were no better alternatives when it came to encrypted communications, not until iMessage, not until WhatsApp. And when those were released on their respective platforms, it really showed that BlackBerry, its entire infrastructure was behind the times. Not to mention the fact that its entire raison d'être was about saving bandwidth, right? It was all about the fact that all of its network data went through a proxy that compressed all the information while it encrypted it, so that you wouldn't have to spend more than you needed to on your monthly bill, because back then data was super expensive. And as we saw in the early years, and Rene Ritchie on Vector has an amazing video on this, actually, about how the iPhone killed BlackBerry. And it's a bit of a it's a bit of a baity headline, but it's kind of true, because when the iPhone was introduced in 2007, it murdered Singular's network, like completely destroyed it on Edge. When they introduced the iPhone 3G, it killed AT&T's network as well for a couple of years, but it forced every single network to make necessary upgrades. And by the time the iPhone 3GS was released in 2009, I mean, that was 2 years before BlackBerry's peak, but it was already showing that its strategy of just like trying to save as much data as possible was not tenable, because AT&T had put together the infrastructure upgrades necessary to offer more bandwidth. And as a result, people started seeing that you could actually use your phones for more than just email and texting. And that was it. Game was over.
That kind of, you can expand on that a little bit too, because Daniel, you probably remember, even though you mostly back then covered the Canadian smartphone scene, when the G1 came out, it killed T-Mobile. T-Mobile's 3G network, when a phone with, what did they call it back then? Google Talk? I think that's what it was called, Google Talk. It literally could bring T-Mobile's 3G network down, which T-Mobile didn't have a very robust 3G network, but that got everybody's eyes open, and even companies that weren't trying to get the iPhone because they knew they couldn't, like Sprint, for example, they made, you know, monumental upgrades to their network infrastructure because they knew smartphones just changed. And Joe, we wouldn't have Android 10 if it wasn't for BlackBerry.
Oh yeah, I believe that for sure.
The people like to give Palm a lot of credit for the modern smartphone, and I do agree, but I don't think we would have had a Palm Pre had it not been for BlackBerry. I don't know what we would have had, but what we have today is, you can see it's an evolution of the first modern BlackBerry, you know, maybe the 8800.
All of our Windows Mobile users who are listening are just like shaking their fists at you.
Let them shake, because Windows Mobile was hot trash compared to BlackBerry.
Yeah, but it was so different, right?
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to like to discredit the impact BlackBerry had like back in the day. It just always seemed like a silly thing to me to try to build up this, revive it on the idea of security when it had kind of already had done that for the rest of the market and wasn't bringing a whole lot new to the table.
To their credit, no BlackBerry phone has ever been able, no BlackBerry Android phone has ever been able to be rooted. So
that's that, because it has hardware, hardware root of trust, right? There's a step that it goes through when it boots up the phone that it checks for the hardware. It verifies the hardware's authenticity,
right?
And I believe the Pixel does that with the Titan module, right?
Oh, sure. But the next part of that was, a Pixel phone probably couldn't be rooted unless Google made it easy for you to root it. So,
which it does.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no real differentiation today along the security front, other than BlackBerry exposed it to the users first in a very poor way with their D-Tech software, and then they made D-Tech a little more intuitive and a little more useful. But beyond that, no, BlackBerry, you know, Key 2 is really not any more secure than a Galaxy Note or a Pixel or even an LG phone or Motorola's phones.
I think also we have to keep in mind that the first BlackBerry Android phone was a phone that the company itself released. It was the Priv.
Oh, I loved
it. 2015. And that was before Google had implemented a granular permissions model. So D-Tech existed to supplant that, to actually live on top of that by offering the kinds of granular permissions that Google would then introduce in Marshmallow a few months later. So it only took a few months for Google to obviate the need for D-Tech, but at the time, it made a lot of sense. And I think BlackBerry's Android strategy made a lot of sense, right? Offering that differentiation in terms of the hardware keyboard and the secure software. I just don't think they did it right, and they never made enough impact in the market to continue offering it. And I wonder if, you know, if BlackBerry had sold enough Privs that it was justified in making a sequel internally rather than deciding to use ODMs and then ultimately licensing out the BlackBerry Mobile name to TCL entirely, whether the phones themselves would have been significantly better.
I don't know. I mean,
it's hard, right? You never know, because BlackBerry was on such a downward trajectory and they were pivoting around 2015 away from hardware anyway.
Yeah.
It just never felt like their whole heart was in it, right? John Chen was like, we'll try hardware, but ultimately I think software and EMM is really the way of our future. Yeah. And it's borne out in the share price, right? I mean, this is a company on the verge of bankruptcy a few years ago, and it's not quite back to where it was, but it's, you know, it has a solid profit foundation now that I think it's not going to give up anytime soon.
Right. I'm going to miss them. I have been missing using my Key 2. It's the phone that I cut my teeth on was a BlackBerry, and you get used to certain things and you expect things to work a certain way. And now I'm never going to see that again. Unihertz has tried to make a BlackBerry clone, but I know it's not going to be the same.
I have one. It's terrible.
Oh, thank you for saving me money.
Don't come near that thing. It's okay. Terrible.
Because okay. I want my keyboard shortcuts. Well, first off, I want my keyboard. I want my switch on the side to shut ringers off. And, I don't want to buy an iPhone to get that. I want things that I always had from BlackBerry that, I just never am going to get. Just make one more. Let me put Android on the torch, damn it.
Oh, my God. I love the torch.
So did I.
Well, I mean, the Priv was basically a torch. So.
Yeah, just bigger and sloppier and looser and a mess.
Looser. It was a torch after like six drinks, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we had a couple other things that we wanted to touch on today, but I'm going to skip over that because I really just want to mention, I'm going to MWC in a couple of weeks. Our colleagues, Andrew and many others, Andrew, Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile, Nirav Gandia, Hayato Huseman, a whole bunch of people who have been on the podcast before, they will be there. But increasingly, it's looking like many of the companies that we are going to visit are not going to be there. Both LG, LG for starters is skipping the show entirely. They're not sending any of their employees. They're holding briefings separately for their mobile products, and we're probably going to hear about that very soon. ZTE is not skipping the show entirely. It's not having a press conference, but it will have private meetings. And recently we heard that Ericsson, provider of 5G infrastructure and one of the biggest showcases yep. of the entire, or one of the biggest vendors in the entire show, is not coming either. And Jerry, I think this is probably just the tip of the iceberg for companies over the next week or two, right?
Right. When I saw that Ericsson made that announcement, I'm like, well, this is, going to be like dominoes. I don't think everybody's going to pull out. We're still going to have an MWC, but a lot of the very important things that you go to MWC to learn about, you're going to have to go somewhere else now.
Yeah, I mean, that is what it is, right? Ultimately, I'll be in Barcelona whether there's an MWC or not. So,
yeah. I can understand these companies' concerns. This is a very, very contagious and dangerous strain of influenza that is causing a public health concern, not just disrupting a event about technology. This is a true health concern that, I can see why LG doesn't want to go and ZTE doesn't want to show off their new crazy phone that they're building for India, or Ericsson doesn't want to tell everybody that it's a real competitor to Huawei in that venue.
Yeah, I guess it's too easy, right? If you have thousands of people in one place. Yep. I mean, that's the joke about it. It's about CES, is that you get the plague whenever you go to CES. Yep. You shake everybody's hand. The GSMA, the organization that runs MWC, basically, has said, don't shake people's hands. Don't eat food that's been lying out. Don't do things that you would normally do during a trade show. Just use an abundance of caution and you'll probably be fine. And that's the way that I'm looking at it. But it is kind of nerve-wracking in a way when you see these massive companies pulling out of the show entirely. And you're just not sure what's going to happen. So it's going to be an interesting few weeks for sure.
And I know a lot of locals, if you're listening and you live in Spain or France or Portugal, and you go just to see some of the stuff and you're willing to, find a way to get in the doors, you probably should skip it this year. You can learn just as much about it from websites like ours or The Verge or we were talking about Josh Topolsky's new venues. There are lots of ways you can find everything that happened at MWC without going, and I would say the same thing for CES. If CES were happening tomorrow, there's no need to go if it isn't your job.
Exactly. Let us bear the brunt for you. Both, even without coronavirus, these are really, really taxing shows. They're fun, super fun. I'm so happy and lucky to go. But they're a lot. So anyway, we will be back next week after after Samsung's Unpacked event. We will break down every single announcement that Samsung has, from the Galaxy S20 to what are rumored to be new Galaxy Buds, and whatever else the company announces, maybe another foldable. We'll see. Until then, Joe, where can people find you on the internets?
I am on the internets, mostly on Twitter at JoeMarin1, and on Instagram by either the same handle or just at JoeMarin. I don't touch it that often. That's probably not good. I don't know it. But just go to Twitter. I talk about Android, and I like to like a lot of dog pictures, so it's a good time.
Exactly. You're a great follow, because you retweet a bunch of really cute dog stuff sometimes.
I want to know what happened to the original Joe Maring and why it's Joe Maring 1 on Twitter. So after the show, you have to tell me this story.
I wish I knew that.
Got to hunt him down. Offer to buy his Twitter account.
That's my new task. All right,
Jerry, Jerry, where can people find you on the internet?
Sometimes I go on Twitter. It's at GBHIL, GBHIL. That's it. I'm not a big social media user. I'm more of a consumer. So if you holler at me, there's a good chance I will see it, because, you know, I don't post a lot, but I do read a lot.
Yeah, you're a good follow, too. I appreciate your tweets. As rare as they are, I do appreciate them. All right, that's it. My name is Daniel Bader. You can find me at JourneyDan on all the things. You can find us all at AndroidCentral.com. Send us an email, podcast@AndroidCentral.com. We love hearing from you. And if you can, please leave a review wherever you listen to us. It really helps spread the show far and wide, which we are trying to do. That's it. We'll be back next week. Have a good weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Adios.
See ya.